This is Fam Electric Ghost, and we're live on the air. We're talking to Babs, and you are a spiritual development and life coach. And I want to welcome you to the Fam Electric Ghost podcast. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for the welcome. Great to be here with you and your audience as well.
Well, thank you. I want to remind the audience that we are a featured podcast on the Newsly platform. You can see that icon up there. It says, listen on Newsly. If you use coupon code GHOST, you can check that out for free for 30 days. And we will be on Newsly later tonight with this episode. So again, thank you for showing up on the show tonight. And we do have your link,
which is on messages, Steve Creighton.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I thought sure we had those shut off. My apologies.
That's all right. So I would mention your website, which we have up, which is under a bit.ly and connect with Babs. And that will be fully clickable, so you don't have to remember that, but that will be up during the show. And I think I have another link, but what we're going to talk about tonight. And what we like to talk about with people is just the idea of discussing like your story. And I believe that we're going to talk about embracing change, turning to the flow of life. So one of the things we like to go into before we talk about that is ask, like, why do you do what you do? And maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to talk about some of my most favorite things tonight: embracing change, surrendering, and flow. And why I do what I do is because when I was at the darkest point in my own life, I wish that I had had someone like me to help, maybe not lift me out of the darkness, but to reside in that darkness with me so it didn't feel quite so lonely. And so really that's the catalyst that brought me to this place of wanting to be a conduit for others on their journey in life.
I think it's an important thing that a lot of people, you know, it's like you learn a lesson in life and then you figure out if you do want to be kind of a teacher or a mentor and exchange that knowledge, like of those lessons learned. Totally. That's a lot of what people, you know, if you can add value, I think that always feels good.
Well, and I'm a firm believer that we're all teachers and we're all students. And sometimes we're a teacher and sometimes we're a student and sometimes we get to be both in the same scenario. It's just being open to being receptive, but also sharing when we feel called to share.
Yeah, I think a lot of times we go through pivotal moments in life and you face like different challenges. And I think maybe you can talk about your experiences facing adversity and overcoming challenges. And how, you know, what your philosophy is on that?
Well, I think the most poignant challenge that I've been blessed with as of late, October 2022, I had a stroke that left me a quadriplegic. And so as I sit here with you on the camera and your audience and my audience can see this, you know, there's this different appearance because I'm strapped to the chair. You know, it's the finding a way to be new in an old setting with a new body. And so for me, that being a doer, a person that gets it done, to now navigating my day genuinely relying 99% of the time on someone else to help support one activity or another, whether it's eating or, you know, working on the computer or even going out and socializing. I don't get the autonomy, a traditional sense of autonomy or independence of doing that alone. So the idea of overcoming thought and belief of what a full and fulfilling life looks like, let alone sounds like, has been the journey that I've been on for a little over a year and a half now. And I've learned a lot through that process that I wish I'd known before, but I'm really glad to know now.
Well, I think it's hard. It's probably like it's totally life-changing when if you've been independent and then you have to depend on like other things that you're not, is like able to just make your own decisions about everything you want to do, that you've got to they must have really been a life altering mindset to like, I can't just do it myself.
Oh, absolutely. That idea of, I was kind of brought up with this mentality, if it's going to be, it's up to me. So very independent. I kind of joke that I'm a recovering type A personality. I used to be triple A personality. Now I'm just type A personality, because I got to learn how to accept help, how to ask for help, and how to be a good receiver
of help. Yeah, that must be hard.
No matter how that help came, because when you're used to orchestrating things, you're used to being in control, as I've said so often. What I got to learn is the difference between control and command. And control says, if it's going to be, it's up to me. And command says, I'm going to trust the universe that the people, places, things, experiences that I need in my life are going to show up. And I get to learn how to receive those with grace and humility.
It's kind of like the law of attraction. Like, I'm a Buddhist, and it's like, you feel like the Buddhist, sometimes like we let go, and we kind of like, not that we don't have plans, but we kind of trust the universe is going to put in front of us, and we're going to see that, and we're going to react to it, and we'll not lose the opportunity because we've got such kind of a closed mind, so that if things come to you, you don't just automatically reject it. That you start to see things with a more expansive mind. So there are things that you might have missed, because if you have a narrow mindset and you're like, oh, I'm always going to do this, then you won't see it. Like you could be walking in a crowd and you don't see that person. You might go by that person every day, but you totally ignore them because you're so focused. And that person might be a really big impact to your life, and you just don't see them, you know?
Exactly. And that takes it one step further, is the awareness. It's like, I know so often, especially, you know, as we're growing up, people are, what's your life plan? What's your plan for college? What's your career plan? Then you have to have a 3-year plan and a 5-year plan and a 10-year plan. And, you know, I laugh at that now. So because there's this space of not being in control, that realization that even when we think we are in control, we're not.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, exactly. Taking a step back into that place of command where you're opening and you're aware actually also diminishes the amount of disappointment we experience. Because we only experience disappointment when we want things to be different than they are.
Yeah.
And oftentimes that disappointment comes because I planned something a certain way or expected it to unfold a certain way, and it doesn't. So instead of seeing the good that really was already there, sometimes I used to be able to really get down in the molly grubs about the disappointment that it didn't unfold the way I expected or planned and worked for. So that idea of being open, as you said, and not trying to orchestrate the future, opens us up to the things that are around us, the good that is happening, whether it be that person that we walk past every day and have missed for days or years or weeks, whatever, or whether it's the person in our own home and the small things that they do for us, or the boss that maybe is having a challenging day too. And we can make that easier for them just by simply being aware, even though I hadn't planned on supporting somebody else today. We get to be able to do that because we're more in tune with what's going on around us.
Yeah, as an artist, I kind of get this idea of like the muse, and also like the flow state. So I'm kind of a big purveyor of like jazz improvisation and the idea. Like when you start to be a musician, you always want to make everything perfect. When you start learning, you want to hit the scales right. You want to hit all the notes right. And then as you progress, you start to find that there's this idea, like there's no bad note. There's an opportunity. If you hit the wrong note, you could act like it's the end of the world, or you could act like, well, that's an opportunity. It's really not a bad note. It's a different color. It's a different choice I could actually take that and do something. I could evolve the song. And if you take that and then you're like, read the room, if you're going to give a speech and you had a planned speech, but then you read the room and you realize, well, this planned speech might not really fit what this room is generating, this vibe. I'm feeling this different vibe. So maybe I need to kind of follow the moment. Yeah. And that's hard, I think, for people to do because they want to follow the plan.
Well, they want to, we all strive to do well and to be received well. And I think that there's this thought that if we're not fully prepared, that we'll somehow not be everything that people expect us to be. And for me, what I'm finding is that the more I surrender into the moment of where I'm at, which allows me to be mindful and aware of what those around me need and are offering, is then it's just a natural flow. It's that shift becomes natural. You made reference to music a moment ago, and I know that's a huge part of your life. I so love and appreciate that. But I've often heard it said, it's not the wrong note you play, it's what you do afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a response.
You turn in all kinds of amazing things that weren't previously experienced by someone. And in my world as a quadriplegic now, learning to navigate that space anew, I have a couple of phrases that come to mind often. And I think that they are so applicable regardless of what our limitations are, whether they're physical, mental, spiritual, emotional, is that different doesn't make it wrong. It's just different.
Yeah. Well, that's hard. That's a hard thing. Because we're living in an age where, you know, the social media, people want to be like what they see on influencer doing. And what, you know, the influencer has this image. And it's probably a lot of AI. It's a lot of filters. It's not real. And then people are projecting, like they want to clone and copy algorithms and patterns that will get them a million views.
Yeah.
But then what happens is everybody's playing the same song with the same cat video and the same, you know, statement or the same phrase. And yeah, you get a million views, but what value is that to the world if you're just replicating with like what gives you likes?
Right.
Is the number of likes really the point or who you've reached with that post? If you had a post that reaches a million people, right? But if you had a post that reached like 100 people and one of them is a person that gives you an opportunity of a lifetime, the metrics would tell you that could you only reach 100 people, you might give up. But that one person that saw it actually had, you know, is the person you were meant to see.
Right.
That was meant to see it. And it doesn't, the number doesn't match to the impact sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people they don't get that.
Well, and I think too, there's a component of we forget as a society that oftentimes what we see on social media is not, it's the best of the best. You know, so many influencers, you know, they know what their job is and they take it really serious. They want the high life. They want the good life. They want the happiness and the joy and the wealth and all of that. And for me, one of the things that has been my calling card since I joined social media back in, well, we won't talk about how long that's been, but but is I always post from a perspective of what I'm going through. And even the ugly stuff, you know, through the recovery phase after my stroke and even before with some health challenges, the idea that I could share from an honest place and not from a place of pity or wanting that sympathy, but really sharing from a place of, look, sometimes life is really hard. Just because you don't see others talking about it doesn't mean they're not going through it. It just means that they put on more makeup before they go online than some of us. And there's nothing wrong with that if that's what their calling is. But for me, my calling has been, who is Babs? And what am I walking through? And in sharing it, how can I share it in a way where it might resonate, as you said, with one person who reads it?
Yeah, it's that
and whether that's something I gain or they gain. Yeah.
Well, I think it's the authenticity and the vulnerability of your unique story. And every human being has a story. I think the issue, you know, sometimes with the social media is everybody wants to replicate the same story because they think it's going to give them the same level. And then they start getting like imposter syndrome and they don't think their own story is worth it. They don't think their own story is valid. And I think the difference between somebody who's like, you know, a creative person who suddenly gets somewhere isn't some kind of overnight thing. It's usually because they had the kind of courage or the catalyst to put their unique story. There's probably a lot of pain in it. There's a lot of trauma in it. There's a lot of work that got put into it. And you might see that they came out overnight, but it's not overnight. It's a progression of somebody doing something, you know, incrementally and getting better and better and then becoming like an expert and then being able to voice something that now you find a commonality. Not that it's the same thing, but there's an empathy.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think people have kind of lost sight of like empathy in, you know, and then people just copying things. Like if you have the vulnerability that triggers you to like have, you know, that you say something that triggers a mental image in somebody's mind or they find that moment that resonates, it seems parallel. And then they can start to, you know, want to stay with you and hear what you have to say because you've actually pulled them in like a writer that pulls somebody in with a really interesting detail in their story.
Right.
And that detail kind of locks you into the story and then suddenly you're lost in the story because it resonated.
Yeah. For me, it's the idea of, I'm a huge fan of butterflies. Always have been, even before they were cool, loved butterflies. And I recently did a TED talk about adaptability and the shift from control to command. And one of the very opening ideas that I shared was that a butterfly can literally defy gravity and take flight with upwards of 70% of its wings damaged or missing.
Wow.
70% damaged or missing. And so what that meant to me was, well, what's the best 30% of me that I can share with people?
Mm.
And it's the best 30% of me, which means I have to set down imposter syndrome and I have to get really honest about who I am. I feel like so often, you know, people call, you often hear like, oh, you know, you've got that, it's like the 7-year itch or what's the other phrase? Like when you're you're at a turning point in your life, like a crisis, like midlife crisis. There we go. Sorry about
midlife
that.
Midlife crisis. Yeah. Midlife crisis. Yeah.
And see, for me, what I'm recognizing is that it's not a midlife crisis. It's an identity crisis because for so much of our lives, we had no idea who we were.
Mm-hmm.
And now something's coming up in our experience that's asking us to dig deep into our own presence, our own essence, our own identity, and to operate from that depth because the surface stuff is too hard. And we can't do that because we've not done the work. We followed the influencers thinking that 100% of their life was great. And so we, in focusing on that, we're distracted and we don't do the work for ourselves to find out who we are and what makes us happy and what it is we feel like our calling is and how we can help people and how we can learn to receive. But we don't mess with any of that stuff because we're too busy putting on, as they would say, the emperor, you know, the emperor has no clothes.
Yeah.
Putting on the invisible clothing so that our costume is approved, you know, it's approvable by those around us. And I think the reality of it is that the people around us would much rather see the heart and soul of who we are. And that's where relationships really blossom, whether they're personal or professional, whether it's a business or whether it's a total stranger on an airplane. If we're not in touch with our own identity, no, we're probably going to look at those surface things that can be irritating and distract us from the good that's taking place right in front of us, even amongst the chaos that life might appear to be showing us.
Well, I'm a big believer in like frequencies and vibrations, and you know, I'm a musician. So I tend to feel that if you have a very positive vibration, if you have something that's harmonious, mm-hmm. and you go into the crowd, you're going to, the law of attraction, you're going to have all these people being drawn to you, yeah. because you're giving off that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like if it's a musician, I can kind of describe it as like, you know, a melody is harmonious versus mm-hmm. something that's dissonant or noisy.
Yeah.
If you have something that's harmonious, it's going to attract people. But mm-hmm. if you have a vibe that's prickly and abrasive, then, you know, you're going to attract that. You're going to bring that around you. And then you're probably going to wonder why am I getting trapped in this codependence of everybody around me? Is kind of reinforcing that. Well, because that's your vibe.
Right. Well, and it comes back to the identity. As you said, as a musician, you see that flow. And if we're not sure who we are, like for a lot of years, sometimes I felt like I attracted each individual in any setting that had the most need. I seem to attract those types of individuals. And it wasn't until I stopped and really began to introduce myself to me again and find out who I was that I realized that I attracted those people because they saw my heart and soul as a safe place to share, as a comforting place that might be willing to give them some support. And I didn't know that. I just thought I was attracting people that, you know, were kind of victims of their own fate by choice. And so when I got clearer on who and what I am, it gave me the opportunity then to be more supportive to those individuals. And I no longer felt like I was constantly attracting, you know, the most needy in every scenario. So, you know, it's like, I really do encourage people, if you feel like you're in that space in your life, is think about what your soul, your heart, your identity, think about what that calling is, because your heart and soul might be attracting those people, but you just haven't done the work to be prepared to receive them and support them. And sometimes supporting is just saying, man, I know that's hard. We don't have to have the answers.
Yeah.
People aren't always looking for the answer. They're looking for companionship. There's not a journey out there that's not made easier by a good travel partner, in my opinion.
Yeah, you definitely, I think it's like sometimes like you be too much of a people pleaser and then you don't actually like take care of yourself.
Totally.
And then you're not really, you know, you could be in the mode where you're people pleasing, but you're really not solving their problem. Like you said, you're not really, you set the law of attraction and you're not really defining who you are. It's like once you kind of solve like the who you are, right? Yeah. And what is like stopping you or your glass ceiling is, then you're able to help other people because you finally are like in a place where you're kind of clear. Like if you get to a point where you're more clear and what your purpose is, right? What your story is, and you can relay it. And then you can actually understand other people's stories. Right? And then you kind of get in this flow state of, I can tell my story, but I can hear your story. And if I hear your story, I hear what you're saying, and I actually listen to what you say.
Right.
And understand that it might be different than what happened to me. And empathize with the difference. Yeah. And understand that difference.
Different doesn't make it wrong.
Yeah.
It just makes it different. Yeah, totally. It makes me think too of the idea, learning to navigate a world where words like handicapped, disabled are the forefront of many activities. I had to get really clear on what that meant for me, because I think we all have disabilities. We think we do. And for me, kind of the evolution of working through that is kind of a tagline I have is unable, otherwise able doesn't mean unabled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it kind of goes back to that different doesn't make it wrong. It just makes it different, but otherwise abled. But if we are trying to be someone else, then we're not going to be able to support those around us that come to us, that see the good that we have to share. We then share from a different place because we're trying to be something as opposed to simply being. It's like music, as you said, music just is, and it's how you engage with it. And so you have to know the basics of music. It's the fundamentals, if you will. And we think about that, whether it's music or art or accounting or rocket science or cleaning. We think that there's a certain way things have to be done in order for them to be right and proper and correct. And the reality of it is, you know, it's the old 90% of life is just showing up. Well, I'm learning that the other 10% is showing up as you.
Yeah.
Because then at the end of the day, you're not exhausted. Because it's not you doing something, it's you getting to be who you are for the people around you. And you go home, you go to bed at night fulfilled, you're tired, and tired is good, but you're not emotionally exhausted or drained.
Yeah. I think that if you can, you know, a lot of times people focus on the things they can't have or the things they can't do, and don't focus on what they can do.
Right.
Like every individual human has like certain things that nobody else thinks or feels or does a certain way. Nobody else does it that way. Right. And instead of trying to compete with people who, you know, they do it their way, you kind of start to realize like you have your own way about you. You have your own way of connecting, and it can actually impact people. And there's a lot of worth in it. If you start to understand the worth of you. And not think it's selfish and not think it's shameful. Because that's how I think a lot of times people are kind of taught, like, well, you shouldn't be self-aggrandizing. Or, and maybe, yeah, you shouldn't do that. But it's like, it's not wrong to point out that you have a point of view and, you know, it should be heard. Like, and so maybe you have a different mindset and you shouldn't have to bury it. Like, you can be yourself. And, you know, a lot of times we've been told that, well, you can't. You got to push that down.
Right. But that also what I think we've done as a society is because we've been told to push that down is that we've not learned how to do that self work, whether it's spiritual, emotional, mental, physical, I don't care. There's work that we get to do each day to be the best person we can be. But if we've not done that work, then it all feels really heavy. Even the stuff we enjoy isn't as fulfilling because we may enjoy it, but it's a fleeting thing because it's not necessarily connecting to just the bare bones of who we are.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times it's like, if you can self-actualize and you actually, you know, are able to do what makes you happy, which is a rare thing because a lot of people don't get that. They're doing their 9-to-5 and they're not really happy. They're in their marriage and they're not happy. They're in some situation and they're not really happy. They're just kind of, I'm used to it. I mean, I'm in this pattern. I kind of like the pattern. Maybe they don't like the pattern, but the pattern is acceptable. It's comfortable.
It's known. The devil you know is better than the devil you don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then say it's not really living because you're not fully, you know, actualized. You're not really at that moment when you talk to the people who feel actualized and you're like, wow, why can't I be like them?
Yeah.
Like this person's like doing exactly what they want. They're like the poet laureate that's out there and speaking their poetry. It's like, wow, why could I wish I could do that? It's like, well, you could do something with that's in you, within you, if you chose to embrace it.
Right.
But, you know, we tend not to embrace it. We tend to say, well, I can't really do that.
Yeah. It's the self-degradation that's almost like a badge of honor that we earn early on. Oh, well, no, I could never do that. Well, by golly, yes, I can. You know, I can. I never imagined being able to do a TED Talk even before I was, you know, limited physically. And to watch that process, to watch myself go through that process, to commit to the process of learning and uncovering and experiencing, it wasn't about anybody else but me. I even said, look, if I get 100 views, well, I know I've got 100 friends. That's all that matters. And so I was really committed to the process and learning through that. And I learned a lot about myself. And I actually was able, by committing to that process, and it could be any process, but for me, it was that tech. I actually was able to find healing in relationships around me because I'd committed to this process without the expectation that anyone would ever watch my TED Talk.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I was learning these new things, that was like, I can see how this can help in this relationship with a coworker or this family relationship, or believe it or not, our own thought about things that have happened to or around us that may be decades old, or things that happened before we were even born that we didn't have any control over, to be able to heal that in our thought simply by slowing down and engaging. I learned that, you know, I think sometimes people think that what they do for a living is what causes a lack of fulfillment. Oh, well, I wish I could be an artist, or I wish I could be a musician, or I wish I could be a, you know, a nuclear scientist or whatever. And because I am an insurance agent or I am an accountant, I'm not living my full potential. And so I'm not happy. And what I'm learning is that we get to be happy exactly where we are, no matter whether it's something we want to be doing or not. And that if we can find that peace and happiness in that space, that's when the universe really starts to open up for us, because we're not spending so much time belly aching about being stuck. We're seeing the good in where we're at, and that helps us then to catapult into whatever the next phase is. But if you can't find that sense of happiness and fulfillment where you are, you're not going to find it somewhere else.
Yeah. Cause sometimes like you could be like in your day job, but you find the time for your passion thing. And whether that's, you know, volunteering or doing theater or being a, going into, you know, whatever you want to do, is like finding that passion thing outside of the job. I think sometimes people get stuck because they don't kind of open up the possibility. Like you could, you know, you could have a day job that's kind of, you know, mundane, but your passion thing is that you go out and you go to a poetry shop at a coffee house and you start getting a following. You do that when you, in your extra time, and you build up this other part of you.
Yeah,
and there's nothing stopping you from doing that.
Yeah.
But you, like, you're the only one stopping you from doing that.
Completely.
The job isn't stopping you. You can take your free time, and instead of watching TV and surfing your phone, you could do something else.
Right. Yeah, you could do something else that actually fuels you for that 9 to 5 that you don't necessarily love, but it serves a purpose. If you're doing things in your free time that do feed your soul, then it carries over into those areas where we're not quite so fulfilled. The other thing I've often encouraged people to do, doing it myself first, was if you want to try something new, or you want to do something new, or there's something you've always wanted to do, but you're not sure how to go about it, get involved with kids who are learning to do that task, because kids are so much more open.
Yeah.
Especially if they're eager to learn something. And so that creates an environment where you get to learn alongside them. And you also get to be an example to them that, look, they may be doing this now, but there might be something 30 or 40 years down the road that they've always wanted to do, but never did. You're the example in that space of someone who is, you know, further on in their life than those kids might be, that's coming back and trying new things and doing new things. So it's as much about listening to your own passions and desires. And if we do that from a place of really authenticness and humility, we actually get to be a blessing to the people around us that are having those same experiences. And it, the age doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That so is so many. Find a space where everybody's open and willing. And usually that's with kids of one age or another.
Yeah. There's a lot of examples. Like you find people that, you know, they come back into something, you know, and they go into, you know, the coaching, or they go into like, oh, I wanted to get into kayaking and get into a youth group and start doing that. Or I knew a guy that was a little older than me, maybe 10 years older. And he wanted to get into mountain biking, and he knew I mountain biked, and he got into it. And then he got so into it, he started building up a group where he actually, after he got trained, started training kids how to ride. And, you know, and it wasn't something that he planned on doing, but he got so passionate about it, but he kind of, you know, paid it forward and took his passion to get other people excited about it. And right. I think that's what you're talking about. It's like, if you can take the thing you're passionate about, it kind of goes both ways. If you're out in society, then you feed, you know, feed in and you feed out, and you get stuff comes in and out. It's like you connect all around. Yeah.
It's the flow. It's coming and going. I think so often we hear people talk about the roller coaster of life. And I used to totally buy into that premise, you know, the ups and downs and, oh my gosh, the bellyache after you get off of whatever experience it is that just smacked you between the eyes. And what I'm learning is that the more in touch I get with who I am and why I'm here, the more I realize life is not a roller coaster. Life is the ebb and flow of the ocean on the beach.
Yeah.
It's strong enough to pulverize those rocks and boulders and turn them into beautiful sandy beaches, and yet gentle enough that those grains of sand remain there in that beautiful space to support the ecosystem, to support tourism. You know, it's like there's so much more to it if we can just get quiet and not focus on the disappointments.
Yeah, there's a lot of noise. There's a lot of noise in the disappointments. And like sometimes you have to quiet yourself. And I've always kind of been, you know, as an artist, I've kind of learned, and I learned this from like a mentor, is like, before you try to create anything, kind of get yourself into a space where you're like not connected, right, to your cell phone. You're not listening to the TV or the radio. You give yourself, you know, whether you got to go for a walk or just kind of quiet yourself. Yep. And if you kind of get into that quiet, then things will come. It's like this idea of the muse. And you, as a human being, I think we all can receive the muse in different ways, not just the artist, but you can kind of get that spark that makes you make a decision. And it's kind of internal and external. And you get the people think it's foo-foo if it's coming from outside. But, you know, if you're in tune to it, you pick up on it.
Well, look, I for me, you can call it foo-foo if you want. And there have been times in my life I did call it foo-foo. But what I recognize is that it's less about what we call it and more that we acknowledge it. Again, different doesn't make it wrong. It just makes it different. So look, if I had continued to be caught up in the idea that people thought that my spirituality had a foo-foo-ness to it, then my growth is stunted. My own growth is stunted by the perceived opinions of other people. And usually those perceived opinions aren't spot on. And usually they're not full. They don't have the full story to go with it. So to make those choices based on that, we create our own limiting spaces by doing that.
Well, yeah, caring about, like, I think a lot of times as somebody who makes, when you make a decision, there's going to be a reaction. So it's like, so if you don't make it, any decision, even a non-decision, is a decision. So if you don't find your true self, if you don't support, you're going to be kind of stuck, and that's going to lead to that result. Right. If you start to push, well, you might get, you know, the law of attraction is like, once you start to change, people around you might not accept that new you. So you might end up being around a new group of people, and that's scary because you were used to these other people. But those other people could have been like in a codependency and it wasn't helping you.
Right.
Right. So it's like, it's fearful to go to that new zone with these other people that are like in your frequency and they're kind of vibrating with you. That's scary. But sometimes, like, once you start to realize it's not so scary, that's different. It might be hard, but it's not necessarily scary. It might be harder work to be done. And, you know, I think a lot of times people think things are easy. That right. Most things are not easy.
Yeah.
Most things are actually somewhat difficult, but you know, just because it's hard doesn't mean you shouldn't try it.
Well, and don't make it even harder by doing it for somebody else. You know, I don't know about you, but I'm a whole lot more apt to dig into a challenge if I know it's for me and I'm going to grow from it than if I'm doing it for somebody else and I'm going to get nothing from it. That's that space of exhaustion at the end of the night. When we're here, when we think we're here for everybody else around us, and we fail to take care of what's been given to us. And by taking care, that means not only maintaining, but growing and expanding on that. But if we're so caught up in the approvals of those around us that really have no more meaning to it than, you know, a good attaboy at the end of the day, we become overwhelmed. That's where burnout comes in. And so if we're able to take a step back and find the balance between our own work and the sharing of that work in whatever way that comes to us, that balance, that ebb and flow, we get to see that the roller coaster isn't quite so scary. And look, we've all made new friends before. We've all looked into new groups and become parts of new groups. And guess what? We're still here to do it again. It didn't kill us.
No.
So it's a belief card.
Yeah. I think a lot of times we have beliefs that aren't truths, you know, and we think they're truths and they're limiting, you know, because it's not like, if you're like, I'm not good enough. Well, that's not really a truth, but you were probably told that it's really a belief.
Right.
So the truth is like you are, you know, everything you can be. And so the idea that you're not good enough, well, that somebody maybe told you that, and they, you know, as a parent or a grandparent or bully told you something like that, and it wasn't a positive thing. And it's hard to get over that. Sometimes they like, that's the hard thing to get past.
Well, it's easier to accept that than it is to do the work to prove to yourself it's not true.
Yeah.
You know, I think so often, especially here in our Western societies, we miss the benefit of tradition and ritual. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think primarily if we go like to the Outback, you know, they do the walkabout at a certain age.
Yeah.
And they're out there on their own, no support, no help. And yet what they get to learn through that process is that even in their solitude, they're not alone.
Yeah.
And that they have everything they need to survive if they get out of their head and just are open to what is available around us. And we just don't go through that process as part of a Western society the way that some others do. And yeah. I think we are poorer for that. I think it makes change and growth harder for us, but hard isn't impossible. And not to use somebody else's phrase, and forgive me, her name's escaping me in the moment, but we get to do hard things. And we do hard things not because they're hard and to prove it to everybody else, but to remind ourselves of our own ability that is given to us at birth to overcome even things that we think are insurmountable.
It's interesting you're talking about that, the Western culture, because like, I lived in Japan for like 2 years, and my daughter grew up, you know, her first schooling in preschool, and kindergarten was in a Japanese school. Oh, wow. That had a totally different mindset. Right. Mm-hmm. And even to this day, she's an artist, and she, her art has like a Shinto kind of motif. Mm-hmm. And she's got this Eastern motif, and she's an African-American young lady, and she's got this Eastern kind of style. And people get like really intrigued. Like, how did you get that? And because she was in a different environment.
Right.
And the way art was kind of really promoted in Japan, there were all her schools, there was a lot of art that was in part of the curriculum, from even learning the kanjis and the katakana and the hiragana. This is this artistic appreciation and not kind of denigrating it. And thinking that, you know, she learned like taiko, she learned music, she learned a lot of art with her science and other things. But there was an appreciation for art that sometimes is not really respected here. And I think that's where we start to lose some connection, because there's a lot of like art therapy that's very kind of, I believe it's necessary for your human development to kind of dive into that. Whatever it is, but your artistic tendency, I think every human being has it, but we're kind of dissuaded from getting into it.
Well, but, yeah, there's a difference between having that calling and then performance.
Yeah.
And I would never speak for another artist, musician, but it's when it's about the performance, that to me is not artistry. Mm-hmm. When that's the starting point, there's a component of the performance that's important, because that's how we share and that's how people receive. And that's how their inner soul is touched, is through that performance. But if it's all about the performance and we're not starting from that place of resonance, that soul space, if you will, then at the end of the day, we're going to be exhausted and overwhelmed and burned out, because we're not feeding our own soul as we're doing for others. So I love that idea of your daughter being introduced to those different cultures early on, because we begin early in school to impose limiting beliefs. And sometimes they're gender, sometimes they're racial, academic, sports, you pick a genre and we can condition you for it. And it's the conditioning that we grow comfortable with, because it gives us an outcome, an expected outcome. And yet the conditioned thinking actually leads us further away from who we are and why we're here.
Yeah.
There's a good component to it. But to me, the biggest thing is the conditioned thinking really does a lot of harm.
Well, it just kind of throws people into these like lanes.
Yeah.
And they're kind of restricted. And I've always had a very kind of expansive mindset, kind of like a Renaissance kind of idea, like science, art, music. It's all part of the same thing. And having that kind of creativity, because my day job, I'm a software designer, but I'm into music. And so I use logic. I use like left and right brain, mm-hmm. I use the math and the art of it. Right. And there's a lot of creativity, you know, that can be done in things that seem like they're just logical, but there's a lot of art in it. And I think that when you start to find like that, there's a lot of kind of genre or things that cross lanes. But people are so taught in Western society to stay in lanes without understanding the cross kind of gray areas, that now everything's black and white. There's a lot of things that can take pieces of all, everything's a piece of everything. And if you don't think that way, if you think it only can be X, it can only be Y, it can only be black or white, then, you know, I feel sorry, because it's like you don't have this vision of what could be.
Right. It makes me think of the phrase, change is believed to be hard. We think that changing is hard. And what I'm realizing is that as I have grown and evolved, I'm not changing. I'm simply remembering who I've been all along. Mm-hmm. And just that shift in my own mindset, because yeah, change is hard. I mean, that's drilled into us from the time we're learning to tie our shoes and get dressed and choose outfits before we go to school and what meals, you know, what we're going to eat. But it becomes the space of, I'm not changing. I'm simply remembering who I've been all along. I just forgot along the way because I got all this other distraction.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting when you're talking about, like, children are easy to kind of deal with when you're teaching. It's because they have that kind of child, that curiosity, and they don't have the limitation thrown on it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I can be an astronaut. I can be president. I can do, like, there's no, like, you ask the really young kids, there's no limitation on them unless somebody already started, you know, hammering it into them. But there's this belief that, why not?
Yeah.
Because it hasn't been kind of set into them that, like, oh yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah. You know?
And once you, I think sometimes at different points in our life, we get back that childlike curiosity or that like really passion about something. You get this passion thing and you're like, well, how can you be that passionate? You're like 65 years old and you're passionate about doing this. It's like, it seems kind of immature. It's like, but it's not. It's like that you just found yourself again.
Right. Well, and it's also the reminder that when people, regardless of age, but especially as children, you know, it's like giving them a hard time about enjoying the same movie over and over again, or the same song over and over again. It's like being told that that's wrong or being made fun of. Like, those are the early days of finding what they're passionate about. And so for me, it's that space of genuinely, and this is a whole lot easier to say than it is to actually live, but genuinely loving people exactly where they're at without any expectation that they would change. Because if we just,
that's hard for some,
we accept people where they're at, guess what, that's a gift to them as well, because we get to see them as they are. And that we may be the very first person to actually let that person feel seen.
Yeah, I think it's really important to not, like, kind of hinder that. Yeah. You know, there was a story about, like, Hendrix when he was a little kid, that he was running around with, like, a broom, mm-hmm. and in school and stuff, and his teachers kind of said, well, you really shouldn't take it away from him, because he used to fantasize about, you know, it was a guitar.
An air guitar.
And his teachers say, you really shouldn't take that away from him, because he's kind of like a kid that's in his head. There's nothing really wrong that he's doing. And it was cool that teacher realized that.
Yeah.
You know, because there could have been a teacher who said, no, you can't have that broom, and, you know, that's against the rules, and take it away. And that could have really altered the world. We would have never got Hendrix the way we saw him, because, you know, he ended up getting that guitar.
Right.
Because nobody took the broom, and he finally realized, why I actually need the guitar. But if you take that away before he got to that conclusion, because he said, oh, it's wrong to be walking around with the broom, then you ruined it.
right. And I think to kind of round that thought out is, you know, I think arguably, or maybe inarguably, Jimi Hendrix is one of the best musicians of all times. And it started with a broom and a teacher that said, let him do it. Just let him be. He doesn't have to do anything right now. Just let him be. And that may very well have been the gift that gave us one of the most amazing musicians. And so we can have that same conversation with ourselves. Can we just be? Can I walk into a group of friends or a business meeting or, you know, a social setting and just be? I don't have to do anything. But if I can just be, then I know immediately whether I'm in the right place or not. I don't have any misgivings about stepping away or stepping forward and engaging more. If I allow myself to just simply show up as I am, and for that to be enough.
That's great. I think it's an awesome place when you find out that that can be, you know, that can be your life. And a lot of times that's a really big, crucible moment where you realize that. And usually, you know, from that moment forward, you find like your life purpose, because you actually weren't really there. And then you finally find it. Yeah. It's like, I've heard this story a lot on the show, and it's, seems like people, you know, you never know what age you find that. Sometimes people find it in their 20s, they find it in their 60s or 70s. They, you never know. It's like, it just happens whenever it's supposed to happen, you know, for your life.
It happens when we're ready to receive it. And there may be different parts of our life that we're ready to receive that in completely different decades of our life. It's not a one and done thing. We get continue to open to even more parts of life, even once we feel like we've mastered one, or we're really good at just showing up in one space. There's always another space that I don't know about you, but Babs,
never done until you're not here. Right. The way I always, my grandpa used to say, is like, you're never done until you're not here. Like you're right. There's always something.
That's right.
So it's like, everybody wants to be done. It's like, well, you're not really done until you're done.
Well, and we don't even know then.
Yeah, so even then.
Why operate as if we do?
Yeah.
Let us just be.
Might not remember, but you're in the next place.
Right. Exactly.
But I want to thank you again for being a guest on the podcast. It always goes by quicker, and I do have another one. But we do have your Bit.ly. Connect with Bob's. So we didn't mention what happens if you click on that, so we can maybe tell people what happens if they click on your URL.
Oh, it'll send you to my Instagram page. You can interact with me on my website. You can check out my TED talk about the difference between control and command. Or if you just want to send me a message, you can do that as well. I'm here to receive and I'm here to share. And I couldn't be happier than to have spent the last hour with you. What a great conversation. Thank you. And I look forward to the next one.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we like to have people come back. So we always have guests come back, you know, over the time we've done these. So I am really happy that you've been a guest on the Family Electric Ghost podcast. I hope you have a great night. And thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. Good night.